If you've been listening to this podcast for the past few months, you know that there are two musicals we tend to bring up. Hamilton, which we talked about in episode 3, and Rent. Rent follows a year in the life of a group of starving artists in New York City, trying to survive and succeed while dealing with HIV, relationships, and paying rent. This show paved the way musically and culturally for every rock and pop musical that's been on Broadway since. And it's also my favorite musical of all time, so I'm really excited to share this conversation I had with my friend Roberto, who is honestly the biggest Rent fan I've ever met. All spoilers in this episode will be after the spoiler horn, so I hope you enjoy this episode of Corner of the Sky. Hello, I'm here today with my friend Roberto.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about our favorite musical, Rent.
Woo!
I say it's our favorite musical because it is my personal favorite.
It is my personal favorite.
And your personal favorite. Yes. And it's also our, like, collectively favorite musical because we've had several experiences of this show together. So I thought it'd be perfect to start off talking about that. So did you want to kick it off with telling your personal attachment to the show Rent?
Sure. So I actually found out about Rent through my sister, who really liked the movie at one point in time. And then randomly one day, a couple years later, started playing, like, I think it was like Take Me or Leave Me or something on the computer one day. And I was just like, wow, like, this is pretty cool. And then I started listening to, like, Rent movie songs by myself. And then I started listening to, like, Rent the show songs by myself. And then I started listening to, like, Wicked, Next to Normal, and Spring Awakening. And all the other shows started, like, coming along. And I basically just, like, fell in love with, like, Broadway music and theater, and it was all because of Rent. And then so I think in high school for me, I kind of came in and I, like, really tried to be a certain way and, like, fit in with, like, a certain crowd. And with, I guess, with musical theater, I was able to kind of, like, really, I feel like, discover myself. And I remember when I hit it at first, like, I remember I had, like, a secret little iPod that I would, like, keep in a secret drawer that no one ever knew about, that, like, was filled with, like, songs, because I was, like, I don't know, embarrassed or something, because I thought people would judge me. But then, like, sophomore year, I kind of just, like, started telling people, and I just felt so much more comfortable with myself than I had in a while. I actually wrote my, like, college specific, not my college essay, but, like, the specific school supplement essay on Rent. And, like, musical theater and how it, like, impacted my life. So it definitely means a lot to me, and Rent especially means a lot to me. I even made my poor parents drive all the way to, like, Cape Cod just to watch Rent at some random little theater, and they had never been to a show ever. So they left, like, literally after act one, they, like, got up and, like, left. And I was like, where'd they go? And they, like, called me, and they were like, where are you? We're waiting outside. And I was like, show's not over. There's an act two. but yeah, Rent is, will forever have a very special place in my heart.
That's such a beautiful story. We're just going to end it right there. Just, like, your touching testimonial to the love of Broadway music. You know, Rent is also, like I mentioned, my favorite show of all time. And I was also introduced to it through the movie. And I came from a very musical theater heavy home because my mom loves Broadway musicals, and she's incredible. So she introduced us to a lot of Broadway music early on. Like, I think I was, like, born knowing about Wicked. I know that Wicked wasn't out yet when I was born, but it feels like that. But and my mom loves Rent as well because, I mean, it's incredible. And I don't remember how old I was, not old enough to understand everything that was going on, but she put this movie on to me and my older brother and my younger sister, and she was like, okay, we're going to watch this right now, and you're not allowed to ask me any questions, because I'm not going to answer them, but we're going to watch it, and you're going to enjoy, like, what you understand. And I'm like, okay, and of course, like, all three of us love show tunes, because we really take after our mom. And so we immediately wanted the music on our, like, iPods or whatever we had. And she was like, okay, but she wouldn't let us have, certain songs on our iPods, like, we were definitely not allowed to have La Vie Bohème because she was so scared that we'd be singing it out loud somewhere. And I was like, I don't see why that's a problem. And now I'm like, oh, okay.
Now it all makes sense.
And then I specifically remember a year or two later, I think we were watching the movie again, and my sister and I were singing along, and my mom's like, wait, how do you know the words? Like, you're not allowed to have on your iPods. And we're like, yeah, we've just watched the movie 100 times. Memorized it from that. She's like, oh, good. And so I promise we are going to get into actually talking about what this musical is about and aspects about it. But before, I want to tell the story of us seeing this musical together, because it was so great. So I'll tell the first half from my perspective, which was, so Rent just had they might actually still be going on the 20th anniversary tour. And so it's a touring Broadway cast. It was the first, like, professional touring cast in my awareness of Rent as a thing that I could go see. And so I was super, super excited about it. And I am from Maine, and it was going to be in Maine last November. So I actually went up for the weekend and saw my friends and family and saw the show there. And it was absolutely beautiful. And my friend got me a ticket because it was showing at her school. And because she knew that I loved it, and she also had seen, I think I showed her the movie once and she liked it, wasn't super, super into it. And so during the show, I am sobbing. Like, I'm literally sobbing for like the second half of the show. And she looks over and she's like, oh my God. She thought she killed me. I'm not even sure. But it was really great. And I just see this beautiful show. I'm just like overwhelmed with emotion. And then I pull out my phone and I have 6 text messages from Roberto because I had Instagrammed a picture of the stage. And I had all these text messages from him like, are you seeing Rent? Where are you? Why didn't you bring me? Why didn't you tell me about this?
I just felt so offended because I thought we connected over this.
I was like, at what point did we make an agreement to see Rent together?
Do you need spoken agreements for things like this?
But then we did end up making an agreement to see Rent together because you were mad.
And we did. And we got a bunch of people from our little show choir into it too, organized like a whole group order. And we went to Boston and it was so much fun and it was so good and everyone was so good.
It was really, really good. And it was super cool for me to see it again as well because...
Wearing your 20th anniversary shirt.
Yeah, I rolled up in the t-shirt that I bought at the previous performance. I just wanted to be extra.
So extra. Like, yeah, this is my second time seeing it, in case you didn't know.
Well, it's so funny because it was back in Maine in November, which is near the very beginning of the run. And now we're
Which also makes no sense.
I know. Maine and Massachusetts are so close to each other. I don't know. Don't know why. But then, yeah, it didn't come into Massachusetts until April. It didn't come to Boston until April. And so... I could actually see the differences in the way that, like, I just felt like the performers were that much more comfortable because they'd done the show 100 more times, and it was really cool to see, and I felt like such a snob, but I just let it wash over me. It was great.
Quinn and I have the same birthday. I'm not sure if this has been established yet. We were born on the same day in the same year, and I still think it's the coolest thing.
Okay. I just want you to know, audience, I did not cut out any context. There was not any point in which this became relevant. We literally just stopped talking for 1 second, and Roberto looked at me and just leaned over and went, also, Quinn and I have the same birthday, which is reminiscent of every conversation we've ever had with another person. It's just a timer until at what point Roberto remembers and announces that we have the same birthday.
I still think it's the coolest thing.
It is really cool. It's just more funny to me now how amused you are by it.
Anyways.
Okay, so actually back to Rent. Actually getting into it this time. Tell me about the themes of this show.
I think... one of the biggest things I think for me is really just appreciating those that I know are in your life, the people that are around you, the people that you love, and really making sure that like every day you try to make it no day but today, you know, like every day counts, every day matters, really try to appreciate everything because it could all be gone tomorrow. Like you really don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, especially for the people in the show, they're all dealing with so much, you know, drug addiction, AIDS, HIV, like they're all just... You know, there's so much going on in their lives, poverty. But they still manage to kind of appreciate each other and love each other. And I think that's, like, the most beautiful part for me, I guess.
Yeah. I think that the show really pulls everything to the most extreme. And, I mean, some of these characters are literally facing life or death. And it's really beautiful to show that relationships are just as messed up when you're starving artists on New York as they are when you're just chilling in college as well. Because, I mean, of the relationships in the show, you have Collins and Angel, which are just, like, the perfect couple. And then you have Maureen and Joanne, who are totally on again, off again, dysfunctional.
On again, off again, on again, off again.
And then you have...
Mark.
Then you have Mark by himself with his camera.
Always.
Who is totally me. Like, all the seriously, though, of all the characters in this show, I'm definitely Mark. But putting Mark aside for a moment. And then there's Mimi and Roger, which are just, like, this incredibly intense love story that in some ways is the center of the show. But they have to struggle with so much that disrupts their relationship through the course of it. Measure your life in love, Roberto.
I'm trying.
So we have these big themes of love and of death. And, I mean, it's based after an old opera. So in some ways, it's, like, very overdramatic.
Yeah.
But it all works. Love because Limerick, it's, yeah. It all works because it's put on this setting of grungy New York in the 90s.
It's very interesting, especially when I think about, like, because I think, like, La Boheme is, like, I think it was TB or something in Europe, and how Jonathan Larson kind of, like, made it so specific to something that was so relevant at the time, especially within, like the LGBT community and, you know, the HIV AIDS at the time, and how that was such, like, a huge thing, I think, especially for people at the time. When Rent, 1986 or something, I think, is when Rent opened.
1996, because it was the 20th anniversary this year, maybe.
And because we were born in 1996. It was all meant to be. I think for a lot of people, it kind of, I don't know, gave them something to connect to. So with Jonathan Larson, I feel like he really, when he, you know, I mean, Rent is amazing, and he did that, like, all by himself, pretty much. There are a bunch of things, like, I remember reading somewhere about, like, all the, like, things that he brought from, like, his life into the show. And I think it, I feel like, especially for people at the time, it really resonated with a lot of people that lived that kind of lifestyle in New York.
Yeah, let's just really get into the meta context right now, because, I mean, a lot of great musicals have really important context of the wider world of when they were being written, but I think that for Rent, maybe it's the most important, because not only was it a show that was so incredibly placed in time and space, and was supposed to represent the world around it at a certain time, but it also revolutionized the way that we think about theater in a lot of really important ways.
For sure. I think, I mean, when you think about Rent, right, it's like, yeah, it was so relevant for the time, but it's also been able to kind of, like, live through that. I think, in general, the music was just, like, a whole... It was also, like, revolutionary in the sense that it was, like, this kind of, like, pop opera, I think is, like, the proper term, which it wasn't really a thing, but now is, like, you know, you see so many musicals that kind of, like, have it, like Next to Normal, and, like, a bunch of musicals bear... Like, a bunch of musicals have that kind of, like... pop opera-y music. And so I think Rent in that sense... Also, Rent is almost all sung through. I'm pretty sure it's... Actually, it's 42 songs, I believe. I used to quiz myself as a kid to make sure I could name all the songs.
Aww.
And I would always miss, like, one and be like, damn it, start over. I would go, like, in order. Start with the tune-ups.
You had a lot of friends, didn't you?
I was a kid. I was not a kid. I was, like, a sophomore in high school. I was a full-grown person. I was, like, 16, but it's fine. But I think, I mean, it's just to have every song mean so much and for there to be so many songs, I think it's just, I can't even, like, how Rent is a thing to me is still, I don't even know. It's just so impactful. I don't even understand how someone can be that creative to, like, even do that.
I know. And this is, I mean, this is also the great tragedy of what Rent is, because the composer and writer and the great genius behind the show, Jonathan Larson, tragically died the night before the show premiered. Like, I'm amazed no one's written a musical about that yet. And he did not die of AIDS, which would have been, like, really, really awful. Because I think that's, like, some people have a common perception that he died of AIDS because
random, like, heart thing or something.
Yeah, he had some kind of complication that from an old condition no one saw coming.
Yeah, like, it was very unexpected. That's why, like, their first show, I'm pretty sure they just, like, sung through it instead of, like, actually doing a performance in his honor.
Yeah, I think it was the night before they opened Off-Broadway, and they decided to just sit at the table and, like, sing through the script. But then when they got to the VON, they stood up and, like, there was so much energy they had to do it. And sorry, I've read Jonathan Larson's Wikipedia page multiple times, so I know this whole story. It might be word for word of what's written there. But then, like, his family was there, and with the blessing of the family, they did the rest of the show with full staging, but they were still, like, in their street clothes. So it was this mismatch between real life and theater, which is perfect for Rent, right, in this really beautiful tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, the show really is, I guess, kind of like his life. I mean, it's so beautiful, but also sad how it, like, had to come to an end. But I think it's so awesome how he could create something, and I'm sure, like, that he'd be so proud of, like, everything and how Rent has impacted people and how it's really just changed musical theater. Mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion, like, I think it just really showed how a show can really just have an impact on people. Like, there were, like, Rent heads back in the day. Not my generation, but
that was before our time.
Yeah. Who, like, I think it's, like, the concept of, like, the fact that Rent head is a thing is, you know, so cool, because I just really feel like this show can, no matter where you come from, you know, people can connect to it. I think that's something about it that makes it really special, that in the end, like, the concept of, like, loving and appreciating life is something that, like, I think everyone can relate to.
Mm-hmm. And I just sit here and think about how much Jonathan Larson had to offer the world that he never got to offer it. Because, I mean, like, who he was and what Rent was, like, he really should have been the Lin-Manuel Miranda of the 90s, we'll say. Like, that Rent is a spectacular show. He should have been able to keep working on it through Off-Broadway, work on it to the premiere on Broadway, like, go on to write more shows. And, I mean, truly, Hamilton wouldn't exist without Rent. Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, I think, has gone on record saying that. And the influence that it's had on musical theater. And I just think about, like, what kind of stuff he would have been able to write, and the ways that he would have changed Rent. Because it's also been pointed out that it did, like, he did pass away when it was just off Broadway. Yeah. And shows usually change a lot between, but it was frozen in time.
That's so true. I never thought about that before. Yeah, I mean, it's super unfortunate how it had to be like that, but maybe that was, like, his one song, Glory, you know? Like, Rent was, like, the one thing.
Aww. For those at home who may not know, although I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you don't also like Rent, but in case there are those who don't know, One Song, Glory is the song in Rent.
Which is about him writing, like, his one song before he dies.
Yeah.
I think...
That's weird to think about, like, unintentionally writing a description, like, unintentionally writing your own eulogy, almost. I'm gonna think about this too much.
Mind blown.
Also, fun fact, if I have this right, Rent actually basically invented the Broadway lottery system. I mean, everyone... I'm just going to bring up Hamilton a lot, I guess, on every recording we do of this show. But, like, everybody knows about the Ham for Ham, and that's a lot... Most shows offer lotteries now, but they really didn't before. But then they put out this show that was all about starving artists in New York and, like, the class struggle.
And then all of a sudden, it's, like, only people who, like, can afford to go to, like, expensive shows can, like, actually see it, which is kind of, like...
Yeah, and they were like, oh, no, this is bad, actually. And so they did this lottery, and they were like, yeah, just show up at a certain time and you can get really good tickets for like $20. And it was super popular.
Right. I mean, earlier we brought up the term rent heads, I think. And like that came from people who would like always go and, you know, try to like, you know, win the lottery for rent, which is, and then they, you know, call themselves rent heads.
That'd be us if we were in New York at that time.
For sure. Every day. No doubt in my mind.
I feel like Roberto right now is flashing forward to his upcoming summer in New York, like thinking about the Ham for Ham lottery.
And all the lotteries I'm going to lose in general.
I've won exactly one Broadway lottery.
So impressive.
I got tickets to Wicked, and it was really cool.
I've never won. I've entered so many, and I've just never won.
I'm sorry.
I feel like if Rent was on Broadway, I would. I feel like the fates would make it so that would happen.
That's actually a good question. Is when is Rent going to get revived?
I mean, it got revived off Broadway in like 2012. I want to say something like that. So mm-hmm. it was in New York technically, for some time. Yeah, it's kind of cool. I feel like it'll go on Broadway. Like it'll be revived soon.
Yeah, it hasn't been off for super long. But I mean, Spring Awakening already got revived, so.
Yeah, Spring Awakening was like way after, so. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been that long, that's true. But like, also, it's amazing, and I feel like with demand. I mean, yeah, it got off 2012, I think, right?
I don't know, but that sounds right.
I want to say 2012, because I have the little movie of the last Broadway cast doing the show. Aww. On DVD. Yeah. I remember the first time I watched it was the first time I ever actually watched the show, technically. That wasn't the movie. Bawled my eyes out. And then I had to read the Wikipedia to understand some of the stuff. Like, context. Till this day, I don't really understand what's going on during that song, but it seems like some kind of orgy.
Yeah. Every time I see a musical that puts a random orgy in, which apparently there are actually more than one, and I'm just like, okay, this is happening now.
Yeah. I just was watching, and I was like, oh, I was like, this wasn't in the movie. I was like, why are they all moving in, like, beneath these blankets and screaming like weird things? I just, it's all very confusing. And then Angel dies right after, during that song.
Don't, it's too soon. It'll always be too soon. I actually, when we went to see Rent during the act break, I just tweeted out in all caps, Angel is the most pure character in theater and she deserved better.
But that's like true though, right? Like, I mean, I think it's one of those things where like in the decision to like have Angel be the one that dies, it was kind of like, I feel like the one that people loved the most and like really just felt like was pure and was like, there was someone who didn't deserve to die. It was Angel.
And that is the point though, like they severed the perfect relationship. Right. They took the perfect person. And that's also an interesting choice, and I think it was probably a deliberate choice, is to have the Angel of the show.
Right.
Literally, like, it was not subtle. Yeah. Symbolism. we should have seen that coming way sooner.
That's so fair, actually. I actually never thought about it like that.
Yeah. Well.
He knew. He always knew.
Yeah. To be a gay character who has HIV/dies of AIDS and is also a drag queen and or genderqueer. It's left ambiguous in the show. And I think it's really cool that, like, Jonathan Larson made the choice to make that character, like, the embodiment of what is pure and good in this world. I think that's really lovely.
That's so true. I never thought about it like that. That is beautiful.
I never thought of it like that either. I just thought about it and I'm like, oh, I like that.
That's amazing, especially in today's world.
Yeah. More people should watch Rent.
More people should watch Rent and appreciate it.
Sometimes I just sit here and think about like how good Rent is. It from all aspects. Just not even just like a great show with great music, but also how good it is at representing different kinds of people and love and all these kinds of things. And I'm like, damn.
So beautiful. So many like different kinds of people. I mean, even like within the friends group, right? Like they don't seem necessarily that they would automatically like connect with each other and like be best friends, but they all kind of just like came together and truly just like love each other so much, even they're all so different from all these different backgrounds. Like Marcus from like Scarsdale. And you know, Joanne is like a lawyer, who went to like an Ivy League school, and everyone's so unique in their own way, and somehow kind of like find things. I mean, like, in common, even though there's not like anything like I feel like tangible there except like their love for each other.
Yeah. What's interesting is another thing I never thought about is they never explain how any of these people met.
Nothing.
They're the only people they show meeting are Collins and Angel.
Right.
Because they meet at the beginning of the show. But also, like, Angel already knows Mimi. Like, all of the rest of them already know each other in different ways. And there's just no explanation offered. Not that you need it. People just know each other.
But right.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And also, you don't really fully get the story of, like, what happened beforehand, especially with, like, Benny. I mean, like, you get, like, little, like, drops of, like, oh, like, they lived together. So they were clearly, like, really good friends. And then he married into a wealthy family. But you don't really ever, like, know what exactly happened when they were all together.
Also, the timeline is kind of unclear. Both the timeline in the show, because they kind of, they mark it with holidays.
Yeah, so it's like, from what I understand, it's a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off Christmas Eve, right?
December
24th, 9 p.m.
There you go.
And I'm pretty sure it ends like a full year later.
Yeah, but they don't really mark any time besides to say like, okay, now it's New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
now
all holidays.
It's
Halloween. Also seems like it's like the holidays at the end of the year and then like quickly going through all the other like seasons. Like that's like very like at a point when like they're talking about how all the clubs going like on and off, like they're doing this, they're doing this. Like I feel like a bunch of months are going by, but it's not really like clear.
Mm-hmm.
How much time exactly is going by, I guess.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is that nobody cares. It doesn't matter. There are some shows that if the timeline was left that ambiguous and weird, that it wouldn't work at all because the show wouldn't be good enough to pull it off. But because the show is so good at getting you invested in these characters, and you know what's happening to the characters throughout time, and maybe you don't know exactly what month it is, when certain scenes are happening, but like you understand the timeline, and you see where it begins and ends, and so everything else is just like, okay, this is the story of their life over a year. That's fine. I don't remember what day it is most of the time anyway.
Totally fair. Yeah, I feel like it doesn't even matter. I think like the whole point is just like telling, like it's all about like the people and their like relationships with each other, versus like what's actually where it's happening, I guess, or when it's happening in that year. I feel like the whole, like, it doesn't matter if they break up, like, in January or February. It's just, like, the concept of them going, like, on and off again or something like that, like, specifically to Joanne and Maureen. But, yeah.
Yeah. Can I say one of my favorite breakup lines in pop culture is when Maureen goes, oh, are we packed? And Joanne's like, yeah, and by tomorrow I want you to be.
The beginning of Love You, Woman, Be.
So good.
When you hear it, you're just like, let's go. It's about to start.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we should talk about the music.
Yeah.
We've been talking for like half an hour, haven't gotten into the music yet. That's how you know we got a lot to say.
I mean, most of the, as I mentioned earlier, most of the musical is song. And so almost all of like the messages that the show has are through song. And so I feel like that's why, I mean, me personally, when I like first started listening to Rent, it was just crazy to me how every song was important to the story and, really had its own purpose, you know, like it was everything, even though there are 42 songs, each one has a purpose, in what the overall theme is of the show.
Mm-hmm. There's I mean, I'm sure, again, going back to the Jonathan Larson thing, that there would have been stuff that was taken out and maybe replaced had he workshopped it more. But as it is now, it's still so excellent. You don't see anything in there that you're like, this doesn't serve any purpose. Like, you said, like it, even if it's... Like, for example, there are these little interludes in between big chunks of scenes where it's the homeless people in New York singing these faux Christmas carols for the most part. And yeah, you could cut them out and it wouldn't affect the plot, but it would affect the feeling of the show and the pacing of the show and the way that you experience it in the theater. And it really works the way that it is now.
Yeah. I also think, like, especially with that, it's very important to kind of with bringing in the other people that aren't just the main characters, I feel like it's really important to kind of reflect on how this is something that was happening, like, with a bunch of people. Like, it isn't a story necessarily just about, like, these eight people. It's a story about a bunch of people that are like them. Mm-hmm. And so I think by, like, the constant bringing in of the other homeless people and kind of getting them to also be a part of the story really reflects on that this is, like, about this group, all the people that were also going through this. Like, it wasn't just these eight people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really reminds you, like, hey, all the emotion you're feeling for Angel right now, like, remember that she's not the only person going right. through this. There are thousands yeah. of people going through this.
Right. You feel for the main characters, but you also feel for everyone involved.
So, like we were talking about before, most of the music in the show could be classified either as rock or pop. It's not very show-tuney, the way that you would think about, like, classical Broadway theater. And when we talked a lot about that before, about the way that it really changed the game, but also just makes it so fun to listen
to. So fun. And so, like, you can just jam to it all the time.
All the time. I saw a Tumblr post one time that was, like, someone says, oh, I don't really like Rent. And then it's, like, me. And it's this huge paragraph about the incredible amazingness that is Rent and all these things and probably a lot of stuff that we've talked about today. And then there's a space, and then it goes, also Libby Bowen.
I mean, first of all, I think that, like, there's a song for, like, every mood. Like, there's, like, as we talked about, like, Rent is, like, sad, but it's also happy and about appreciating life. And there are so many, like, high points, right, where you're just, like, you can't help but, like, if you hear the song, just, like, get up and, like, dance. And there's so many, like, points where you're just, like, low and sad because the song is, like, sad or whatever. I feel like Rent just, like, has it all in terms of, like, whatever you're looking for, you know? It's just, I feel like there's a song that'll just get you, you know, and whether it's making you cry or laugh or just, you know, jam out.
There was one time that I was watching the movie Rent with a friend for the first time, and I was really excited to show him this movie, and we were sitting there watching it and, like, enjoying it, whatever, and then Louis Wen starts, and I look at the TV and I look at him, and we're sitting on his bed, and I, because this is, like, in a dorm room, and I'm like, yep, and I just stand up with no warning. So for no reason at all, I'm just standing because I can't sit and watch this scene. It's so exciting.
So pumped. Every single time I see a long table, I'm just like,
I know, right?
I just want to jump on it. need.
After every concert, our show choir goes to IHOP for food, and it's great. And every time, we just end up sitting on this, all of these little tables put together. So we end up this huge, long table. I look at it and I'm like, I'm so tempted. Like, we could totally do it. Everyone here knows the words.
Actually, my first show ever with our show choir, did La Vie Bohème. And afterwards we were in, like, a dining hall, because we watched the show afterwards, and we were watching it in, like, a common room or something. And we went to the D hall just to, like, grab some, like, water, and there was, like, that long table, and we just, like, got on, like, there were, like, the three of us that were there in the D hall at the time, and just got up and just, like, danced and jammed till I got one, and it was so great.
Oh, that's always incredible. Remember that. This was the semester before I joined.
Yeah, and this is freshman fall.
Oh, I'm so sad that I missed this.
It was just amazing. Especially because we had just performed it. Also, I was so happy that we performed it. I remember, like, when somebody said Libby Bohème, I was like, I'm on board. I was like, I know all the words. Like, we're fine.
We don't even need to practice. I can do it right now. I can do every part.
Like, there was, like, a part that was, like, the seafood salad, like, the food stuff. And they were like, ooh, and I was like, don't worry about it. I was like, I got it. Trust me.
I know.
I was like, I already know. This is no big deal.
Meatless balls. Ew. They taste the same.
If you close your eyes. And 13 orders of fries. Is that it here?
Wine and beer. Okay, we could just do the rest of the song. Yeah. Let's not. First of all, no one wants to hear that. And second of all, it's probably get sued. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
But I will take one moment to say that in Libby Bohème B, is my favorite quote of all time, which is, the opposite of war isn't peace, it's creation. I think about it in times of sadness, and it brings me joy.
Yeah, Love You Wanna Be is actually one of my favorite songs. It's short, but it is. I feel like it so much. It's just, I mean, I feel like both Love You Bohems is just really songs that really talk about, like, the bohemian lifestyle, and, like, just makes all of these references that, like, some of them I don't get. I feel like not my time again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you still get the point. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool that these people are just, like, celebrating their lifestyles and just being with each other and just having a good time of their lives at this random cafe.
Yeah. The Viva and Bee is also the one that says, living, not dying with disease, right?
Yeah.
That's such a good line.
Such a good line. Yeah.
Living with not dying of disease, I think it is.
Living with not dying from disease. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we could just reenact Rent for y'all if you wanted that.
Honestly, we'd be down.
That'll be uploaded on my side channel. I don't know where I was going with that. I don't have a side channel. I'm sure we will talk about a few more songs, but we definitely have to talk about Seasons of Love. Because if there is a Broadway cliche, it is Defying Gravity, or and it is Seasons of Love.
So true. Oh my gosh, I can't deal with people who, like, don't really know anything about Broadway. And they're like, oh my god, Seasons of Love. Like, you mentioned, like, Rent for, like, a hot second. They're like, oh my god, I love Seasons of Love. I'm like, my 8th grade did it for graduation. I'm like, of course they did. So did every other 8th grade ever. Okay, we all did. Yeah, Seasons of Love is just, like, everyone, even if you don't know anything about Broadway, like, you know Seasons of Love.
Yeah, because it's not related to the plot of the show.
At all.
Which is interesting. Well, right. I mean, it is, but it's not, like, in the plot of
right.
the show.
I mean, and it's also just, like, I mean, like, you could have it completely be its own thing, and it's, like, nothing is specific to Rent in it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like, about, generally about Seasons of Love.
Yeah. It's about how do you measure life. The life, a year in a life. You measure it in love.
It's also how you tell how many minutes are in a year, in case you're ever wondering.
Yeah.
Like, when you're doing math, and you're just like, they're like, now calculate that. And I'm like, how many minutes are in a year?
525,600 minutes. I can't even say it. I have to sing it.
Yeah. I came up on, like, a stat piece at last semester, and I was like, I know how many minutes are in a year. We were like, I would remember we were at office hours, and I was like, I got this.
My time has come.
I was like, yes.
It's also the song that they start the second act with. So, like, we have the first act, and then, but basically, like, the lights go down, and they're just standing there, and they sing the song, and then they go into the second act, if you're not prepared, because when I saw this in Maine with my friends, we were standing there talking, and I was standing right next to my seat, but my sister and my mom were sitting farther away because they got their tickets separately. And so, like, the music just starts. And so I immediately just sit down because I'm right next to it. And they have to, like, hustle halfway across the theater. I felt bad.
I mean, I think it's also, like, really funny with, like, not funny, but, like, with interesting with Seasons of Love is how it's just kind of placed there. Like, there's just a song where all they're doing is standing there and they're just singing it. And it's kind of, like, I don't know, interesting, I guess, how it's placed in there, so it doesn't necessarily have to, like, make sense. It's not like it's, like, a scene, right? It's just, like, a song placed in the middle of the musical because it's just, I guess, I'm not even sure why. Why do you think why?
I don't know the story behind the song, which is surprising because clearly I've read the encyclopedia on Rent. But just because I guess I've never really questioned it. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's there. But it is interesting because... And another thing about it is, like, they're not in character, because, I mean, you just have the whole cast is just up there. And it also features soloists that are not the main solos of the show.
Right. Which is very interesting.
Yeah, it deliberately features soloists from the ensemble. And I'm going to assume there must be some kind of story behind how that song came to be and why it's placed there instead of trying to make it fit into the actual plot. But I don't know what it is.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, I feel like I can't even see that song being, like, in the plot. Like, I feel like it, like, the way it's done is just so perfect. Like, it, like, needs to be its own thing where you're just, like, there's no choreo, there's no moving. It's just, you're just really there to appreciate the beauty of the song and its message. Mm-hmm. Especially relevant to the whole story. I mean, the whole show is like, you know, a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And again, like, it definitely it encapsulates so many themes of the show, but without ever being like, oh, and this is the story of Mark and Mimi. And like, that's not what it is. But it's also called back to in the show at the end. Like the
finale.
Yes. That's the word for the end of the show. In the finale of the show, I mean, the music for Seasons of Love is back. Also, they line up again, except they leave a spot for Angel. And it's just so sad.
But then Angel goes back at the end, so it's okay.
Yeah. I swear to God, when that little guy came running out at the end of the performance that we saw, it made me so happy. Like, I knew that the actor didn't die, and that so he would be back.
Every single time it happens, though,
but it's every like, time.
When I would watch it on my Rent Live on Broadway DVD, whenever he'd come back out, I'm just like, oh, after like crying. I remember the first time I watched it, I just bawled my eyes out. Bald. The minute Angel died, I was just like, so it was really nice when he came back on.
Yeah. It just makes you feel like, oh, it's okay. Also, there's a whole scene at the end of the show where the last scene is Mimi is brought in and she's really sick and she's been living on the street and she seems like she's dying. And then Roger holds her. And then for some reason, he puts her down and picks up his guitar and plays a song. And that's like, whatever. Okay.
That's the song that he's been writing all year for her.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. He needed her to inspire him.
Yeah. Roger finally got to write his one last song. And he wrote it for Mimi. But then she comes back. And then she tells Collins that she saw Angel. She's like, and she looked good. And she told me to turn around and listen to that boy's song. And you just bawl. Because I feel like for all people in the audience, like, even I would say for me personally, I'm very unclear on the whole afterlife thing, but I 100% believe Mimi that she saw Angel and Angel looked good and that she was okay, and I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about that specific part as like being kind of like everything is okay. But when you think about it, it kind of is like the ending is, you know, everything's kind of like, there's so much going on. Like, Mimi's still clearly very sick, even though like, yeah, she just came back to life or whatever, but she's still very sick and probably is going to die pretty soon.
Yeah.
And like, just in terms of like real life, like she's like super sick, but like the way it ends, it's just like, even though there's so much bad still going on, like all you feel is kind of like good and love.
Yeah. Well, because it ends pretty much literally at that moment, yeah. And they're watching Mark's documentary, right. And they're thinking about loving each other, and but the one line is Roger says, "Thank God this moment's not the last." Not "Thank God you're better," "Thank God you're here," like "Thank God it's okay." Just "This is not the very last moment, so that's enough for me right now."
Because I mean, like many no day but today, right? Like everything is about not necessarily like, you know, what's gonna happen down the road. It's like right now, all we have is each other. And it's really just appreciating that, like, being in the now, here, and really just doing what you're trying to do, you know? Something that we didn't talk about earlier that I think is also pretty important is, like, not this concept of, like, selling out.
Ooh, yeah, that's a really big theme to the show.
Super, super, duper, duper big, especially with, you know, like, the starving artists, right? Like, that's what they're doing here, especially Mark and Roger specifically, Mark with his movies, or with his film, and Roger with his music. And then both of them kind of, I mean, Mark literally like sells out
for like five minutes.
But I think especially as like college students, I think it's super easy to like sell out, especially like everyone does that. I mean, like it's like so common for people to kind of do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really awesome that the way that the story, you know, these people care so much about what they do that despite all of the struggles that come from it, they're still going, you know, to keep fighting for what they want. Especially Mark, I think, is so interesting, like, because he's from Scarsdale, so he probably comes from money just, you know, based on like the typical Scarsdale family income.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to kind of, you know, be like, I know I'm going away and I'm doing my own thing and I'm gonna fight for my art, I think is really awesome.
Mm-hmm. A couple things. One, I'm laughing at Roberto right now because he has a finance internship this summer. So call it like I see it. No, I'm just kidding. Earn that cash. You got it. You deserve it. but two, about like Mark's family thing, because they kind of halfway address this in the movie, because they don't really address it at all in the show. But in the movie, he has one line about after his mom leaves a message on the answering machine and is like, you know, sometimes I'm here and we're broke and we're starving and our power's off. And I think, why do I live here? And then they call and I remember.
That's so, I never thought about how that's in the movie and that's not in the show.
Yeah, because
and what that means, right?
Because in the show, it's kind of implied like he's from a nice, like middle class Jewish family out in Scarsdale, and there's no explanation for why he's a starving artist in New York with seemingly zero money in his bank account. Although, I mean, he must have something,
right? Like it's just yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that's another thing that's left semi ambiguous by the show.
People's backgrounds. Yeah, you don't really know about anyone's backgrounds.
Yeah,
I mean, you get like. There's voicemail number 5, which has, like, all of their, like, parents singing a song. And Mimi brings up a little bit about her background in Another Day, I think.
She basically mentions about, like, how she comes from a not good Spanish neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, they're, the gist they're, of it.
Yeah. That seems like the... I remember correctly what she kind of brings up. And then Joanne comes from you can also like a privileged background.
Yeah, she's got money.
Yeah,
like she's a lawyer. She's Ivy League.
And her educated. Mom's like a judge or like she had like her like special hearing thing. Mm-hmm. They bring that up. Mark's from Scarsdale. Roger or Maureen, I feel like you don't really know much about their background.
Or Angel.
Or yeah, Collins. Angel or Collins. Yeah, I mean, I guess. The question then comes, like, why are the specific people whose backgrounds are brought up? Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a bit of Joanne that's, like, a Deus Ex Machina. Also with, what's his face? The guy nobody likes.
Oh, Benny.
Benny. Is because they have to have some characters with money in the show, or it doesn't make any sense how any of them are alive. Literally, like, none of them are making money.
Yeah.
And so... Joanne is there to be the lawyer, to help them out when they get evicted, to, like, I'm assuming, put food in Maureen's mouth. And Benny is there.
So they like, don't have to pay rent.
Yeah. Like, Benny plays a lot of roles in this show as definitely the foil for almost everything else going on.
Yeah.
But also, like, he pays for Angel's funeral at the end. He pays for Mimi's rehab at the end. Like, they need to have some character there who, for, like, not clear reasons, but, you know, is there to like, pay for things that require money that these people would never realistically be able to pay for.
Right. So, yeah. Benny definitely plays that role, which is interesting because Benny's dog dies because the angel kills Benny's dog, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of implied that's why he paid for those, because he hated that dog. but at the end, the whole time, they never play Benny off as an evil person. He's just, like, the corporate tool. And that was slightly a Dr. Horrible reference. But and so at the end, when, like, the priest comes and yells at Collins for not being able to pay for his partner's funeral, and Benny's like, okay, no, I got it. And you're like, okay, this isn't... Like, he's a human with a soul. Right. We can see how this would happen.
Yeah. I feel like throughout the show, like, there's... You're prone to, like, dislike Benny because, you know, he married into this, like, wealthy family and all was, like... Kind of, like, there's this, like, sense of him seeing himself as above the people that he was, you know, just, like, some time ago. Mm-hmm. Just because now he has money because of this wealthy family. And, he's being a part of the evicting of people who were just like him. And so you're kind of like, oh, this guy sucks. Like, why you gotta be like that? But then there are certain points throughout the show where you kind of, like, see him, that he's not, like, a... necessarily like a super bad person. He does care about the people that are involved, especially his friends. Mm-hmm. I think
he is also cheating on his wife the entire time, though.
Yes,
which is something that is literally never discussed.
Never, like, he's with Mimi, but he has a wife.
Yeah, his wife never appears in the show.
Nope. And she's mentioned multiple times, but
and they never mention the fact that if Mimi is with Benny, then clearly Benny is cheating on his wife. Like, never addresses it.
Never.
Which is so interesting because the whole issue of is Mimi cheating on Roger is a question in the show. And they have different perceptions of, like, what their relationship is. And they never put it on the other side.
It's also unclear sometimes when couples are together and when they're not. I feel like I never fully know when Roger and Mimi actually are legit together, / is Mimi with Benny, ?
It's funny because when you started saying that, like, I know that we're talking about Ren, but that really could apply to a lot of context. You're like, I just don't know when couples are together.
That's so fair. Most of the time, couples don't even know when they're together.
Oh, gosh. They're like,
what are we?
What are we? Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of what are we talks between Roger and Mimi, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like, again, like with most of the group, I feel like they're just two people that you just wouldn't expect to just connect the way they do. But the relationship just starts so fiery, which is why, I mean, like, I feel like that fire brings a lot of the passion, a lot of the excitement, but it's also, like, the reason why they also get into, like, these huge fights and, like, you know, on and off, through multiple points in the show. But I think that, you know, it's just, you know, especially because Mimi's kind of, like, this young, you know, energized 19-year-old, and Roger's kind of, like, this older, seems kind of like he's kind of given up ish, you know, kind of like down, and like, you know, his ex-girlfriend died. He seems like he's, the whole HIV AIDS thing really has like taken an impact on his view of life. I feel like throughout the show he's the one that seems the least kind of enjoying, appreciating life, and I feel like they kind of like complement each other like a yin and yang, you know. And Roger just becomes so much more enthused and passionate, and he's able to get his song. The, you know, one song, Glory, is all about him being able to write this song before he dies, and he's able to do that because of Mimi. And so I think they both, even though it just seems so unlikely, just give so much to each other, and really, I think, bring out the best versions of each other.
Absolutely. And before we go, I really want to talk about a character we haven't talked about that much, which is Mark.
Yes.
Which is interesting. So in some ways, Mark is the main character, but not really. I kind of, like, it's, again, not very subtle symbolism, but, like, he is literally a documentary filmmaker, and the whole story kind of revolves around him while he's standing there. And so nothing's really happening to Mark. I mean, he has a conflict about whether to sell out or not, but most of everything, like, the relationships are happening with his friends, this battle for life and death is happening with his friends, and he's literally there, documenting all of it.
And, like, nothing, like, he doesn't have AIDS, he doesn't have HIV, he's not, like, any, like, he's not dealing with, like, queer issues, like, he's just there.
He's just Mark.
He's just Mark, who's just a part of all, like, every character has something that's, like, they're, I feel like they're struggling with and doing, and Mark, except for, like, the whole selling out thing, he's really just, most of the time, while things are going on around him, he's just there.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, is partially a false issue, as we talked about, because, like, it's implied by the show that he comes from a relatively middle-class background, and so it's not an actual life or death struggle for him the way it is for other starving artists in the show. I love Mark. I'm not even totally sure why. Actually, that's not true. It's because I identify with him very strongly. because, like, he's a filmmaker. He's, in more than that, he's just the person who documents things, which, if anyone didn't notice, is also what I am. So I'm really into this idea of documentation, and looking back on past years, and he has a lot of moments where he's looking around at everything that's happening around him, and he recognizes that he is the person who is standing still in all of this, but he can't really do anything about it, so he just keeps filming. There is one really beautiful moment of the film where it's in slow motion at the end of a BON, and everyone
is paired up.
Like, some of them are making out, and it's just going across the table, and then there's Mark by himself, pounding his fist in the air, and it is so funny.
He's just there by himself without a care in the world.
He's living. And I'm like, oh, it's me. None of this is to say he isn't a super important character, because he absolutely is, and it wouldn't be the same. Like, the show wouldn't function without any of the main characters. Like, they complete a puzzle together. Also, I love his and Roger's friendship. It's just what a beautiful representation of friendship.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little best friendship between two artists who are each trying to do their own thing. It's so beautiful.
They have a lot of duets.
Yeah. And it's also, like, Mark, even though he's not necessarily a part of certain struggles within the show, he's just so critical. Like his being there is so critical, mm-hmm. which I think is so interesting. Like, you can't, there's so many parts where you can't, like, have, you know, the scene where they're all, you know, there's like the circle of, the circle? Life support meeting. Like, at the life support meeting, right? Like, he's, again, just there. Like, he's not, like, he's not dealing with, like, you know, like, I could legit die tomorrow for, like, while these people are. But still, like, his just being there is so important. It just works.
Yeah, I think in many scenes in the show, he's serving as a stand-in for the audience. He's the person who's observing. He is the person who's kind of taking it all in, the same way that the audience is. And so I think that we, and although, like, all of the characters are very three-dimensional and very easy to identify with, in a way, like, you, in your role as an audience member, are supposed to identify with Mark, except when the points when he switches to being the MC of the show, which is really interesting. Like, Liu Yuen, he's really kind of, like, running things.
Yeah.
And setting it all up, which I think is really cool as well, and you see the places that he shines.
I feel like if there's a song that's, like, Mark's shining, it's La Vie Boheme. He's, like, even amidst, like, all of these people and all these people singing, like, he is someone that just, like, sticks out.
Well, because, yeah, he's the one who starts it all off. Like, they were just sitting there, and he's like, nope, gonna sass Benny. And he starts the whole thing. It's beautiful.
Amazing.
Are you ready for the lightning round?
No, but my thought is, like, if it's just actually just, like, lightning and I just hear it, something will just come, you know?
Incredible. I like your confidence. All right. Favorite song?
Christmas Bells.
Really?
100.
I'm sorry, this is supposed to be the lightning round, but that took me off guard. No, that was my fault.
Like, there's literally no doubt in my head. I love that song so much.
Wow, interesting. Okay. Lightning round. Favorite line in the show?
Nutty But Today.
Classic.
I know, but so good.
Favorite character?
Mark.
Who would you recommend see this? Besides everyone.
Besides every human. Specifically, I think my sister.
Oh, a personal recommendation.
Yeah. I don't know, I think that it kind of all started with her kind of, like, introducing me to it. But she's not, like, actually, like, super big fan. And so, yeah, I think my sister seeing it is what, yeah, that's how I do.
That's sweet. And if you could combine the show with any other musical, which would you pick and why?
This is so hard because musicals are all so different. Okay, actually, I would do Ordinary Days.
Okay, tell me why.
Which is a musical about people living in New York, not at all during the time of Rent, and not at all with, like, the same type of lifestyle and dealing with the same type of struggles. But I think I would combine those two to kind of give you, I guess, like, this overall idea of life in New York at different times and different types of lifestyles, like the struggling artist versus just, like, a regular person, like a grad student who's trying to, like, write a thesis. And it's just, like, very different types of people in both shows, and, like, combining that I think would be really interesting.
Ooh, very nice.
What's your answer to that question?
Oh, man. Can't turn around on me. want to combine it. I'm not sure exactly how this would work, but I think I would want to combine it with Dear Evan Hansen, because I feel like both of them tackle different things in similar ways. They're very much snapshots in time. They're very much like very intensive characters, very intensive emotional storylines. And they do take place in different time frames, and they're very entrenched in those time frames. So I don't know exactly how that would work, but I feel like there could be connections there that would be really cool.
Interesting. Interesting.
Thank you so much for coming and talk about Rent today. This is awesome.
Of course. I could always come and talk about Rent. I could talk about it forever.
And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us on Twitter at @COTSPodcast or online at theincomparable.com/COTS. You can also find us in Apple Podcasts, where it would be cool if you left us a review. There's no day but today to review us.
Was it because of the...
Yeah. I'll play for you a clip of how annoying that sounds.